From the heartland of America, focused on God, family, and country, the mouthpiece of the Midwest, this is Dale Carter's America.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Dale Carter's America here at Funhouse Pizza in Lee's Summit. Let them know that you're here tonight. Got a live audience here. They've all had plenty of pizza. We're going to have a great time tonight. Jim Dingman, of course, an awesome host here at Funhouse Pizza in Lee's Summit. He's also got Blue Springs. He's one of our sponsors here on the podcast as well. Bob Watson, one of our sponsors at State Farm Insurance. He could not be here tonight, but Bob never likes to have one of these things go without something giving away. So Bob gave us a couple of Hereford House $50 gift cards. And everybody in the studio audience, please register to win those. We'll give those away at the end of the broadcast. And if you need to check your insurance rates, make sure you're checking with Bob Watson, State Farm agent for five decades. He's my personal State Farm agent at 816-229-7878. Auto, home, life, commercial insurance, boats. We're going to get those out, licensed in Missouri and Kansas. He can take care of you. He will take care of you. Just a great, awesome guy. 816-229-7878, 7th and Main in Blue Springs. We also want to give a shout-out to Royal Roofing and Solar tonight. Austin Watterson could not be here tonight. He is having bypass surgery. Had some chest pains. They went in to do like a stent, and it didn't work out, so he's having bypass surgery. So thoughts and prayers for Austin. His team, they do a great job roofing Kansas City, and they're into solar now. 816-540-7057 for Royal Roofing and Solar. We're actually going to get a new roof on our house, and Austin and his crew are going to do that. They're a couple of weeks behind, but we'll put some pictures up on the podcast page. So how's everybody doing tonight? We all good tonight? Everybody fed? Kurt Wheeler is with me as always, and we appreciate Kurt being in the house.
Hi.
We've got some special guests. We've got some young folks who are going to solve all the world's problems because we have screwed up this country bad enough, right? It's going to be their turn, and they've got all the answers. And if they don't have all the answers, State Representative Jeff Coleman is here from Missouri, and he's got all the answers. At least we've got some questions for him. We're going to get to that as well. One more thing. Jim Dingman gave me this. We have this for those who are here, and if you want to come by, actually, you're not going to hear this because we're taping this, right? I keep thinking I'm live on the air, and we're not, right?
No. This isn't okay. Radio.
So we're for you folks who are here, you know the whole thing with Hershey's. My wife won't let me buy Hershey's, but I do it anyway. Jim Dingman got a special deal on Jeremy's chocolates, and we have she, her, and he, him. She, her are nutless, and he, him have nuts. So make a donation to Chef's Place, and we'll hook you up with some candy bars. I wanted to start the broadcast tonight, Kurt, talking about presidential politics, because it's been kind of an exciting time here. I don't know if you follow this or not, but Tim Scott, who is one of my favorite senators in the United States Senate, threw his hat in the ring. He is running for president of the United States, and I am very excited.
He announced, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he announced today. He gave a rousing speech. And we've talked about this before. As much as I disagreed with Barack Obama on policy, he had an opportunity to bring this country together in terms of race relations, and he did the exact opposite. Race relations are far worse after 8 years of Barack Obama. And Tim Scott gave a speech that just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I love that guy. I don't know if he's going to win or not. It's going to be a process that's going to play out. Ron DeSantis is going to throw his hat in the ring later this week. Donald Trump is already in. There are lots of folks who are on the verge. We may well get to where we were in 2016 again and have 17 people on that stage.
Yeah. I think Trump is still my favorite right now, though, to be honest.
What about the rest of you? Let's Donald Trump, by applause. Win for Donald Trump? Okay. Ron DeSantis? Okay, some Ron DeSantis. Anybody else?
They don't sound very enthusiastic about either of them, to be honest.
Yeah. So I was kind of wondering about this. Did any, and there's no judgment here, okay? We're all friends. We all love each other, right? We're all doing the right thing, or we want to do the right thing. I'm just curious, did any of, because I'm assuming everybody here is conservative, or you would not be here for Dale Carter's America, right? Unless you're going to throw something at me, and that's why I got Scott over here. He's my security. Did anyone vote for Biden because you were sick of Trump? You can admit it. You did. Okay. How's that working out? We got one person who will admit it. I'm curious. Can we get a mic to her?
You don't want to be her on the spot like that?
No, no, no. I'm just curious. I just want to know.
She doesn't want to talk about it.
Oh, no, she's talking. We just don't have a mic on her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a visual that we put up on the Dale Carter's America podcast page. It's like, it's got Donald Trump with a life preserver and the life preserver says Trump's policies, and you've got the guy drowning in the ocean, and the back of his shirt says anybody but Trump, and you've got Biden on next to Trump, and he's ready to throw an anvil out to this guy. You know, that's the difference where we are policy-wise. And I think a lot of people, what they're seeing is that Donald Trump policies were working. What's happened since is not. We're definitely going the other way. And that's what we talk about a lot on this podcast. So I appreciate your honesty. You know, it's good that in a crowd like that. Because, you know, can I tell them a secret, Kurt?
Oh,
God,
boy.
I don't tell many people this. So if you're hearing this podcast or you're in this room, please don't judge me. This is a judgment-free zone, right? Okay. In 1992, I voted for Bill Clinton.
Boo!
All right, no, that's fine. Bring it. Because I regretted it right afterwards. But, okay, this is how decisions are made. I was young. I was in my 20s, right? So this is how decisions are made in politics. I watched the debate. You know, you had Bill Clinton, Ross Perot, and George H.W. Bush was there, and he was running for re-election. Okay. In the middle of the debate, George H.W. Bush looks at his watch. Do anybody remember that? And I thought to myself, you've got somebody where more important to be than this? Our economy's in free fall. I had just gotten fired, which probably was also factoring into my situation there. So I voted for him. And then I regretted it afterwards. And I mean, so much so that I voted for Bob Dole the next time. I mean, you know, that was like my gimme. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm going to vote for Bob Dole. All right. Only time I voted for a Democrat. My wife is glad that her husband or that her father has passed away because I don't think he would have forgiven me.
I mean, I'd rather vote for Bill Clinton than Joe Biden. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And George H.W. Bush looks at his watch during a debate. Joe Biden looks at his watch while there are dead soldiers and he's at a funeral. So,
well,
there's
some
a big difference there.
There is some of that. So that's where we are right now. The 2024 field is taking shape. And as it does, we're going to probably have a decision by the time we get to Missouri on who we would vote for in the primary. But I think it's a safe bet that anybody who so far has announced would run rings around Joe Biden.
Yeah. And I mean, the primary is going to be, I think, pretty similar to 2016. It's like the more people that enter, the better it is for Trump, because all he has to do is just maintain that, whatever it is, 30%, 35% of the base that he has, and he'll win enough primaries to get through. If it was just him and DeSantis, then I think there would be more of a competition. But with more people, it plays in Trump's favor.
What
for
do
sure.
you make of Donald Trump's folks going after DeSantis with ads right now?
Well, I think they know that he's going to run. He's campaigning all over the place. He's been into Iowa, I think, in New Hampshire and other places. I mean, it's you know, typical Trump tactics. He's going to call them names and stuff like that, but that doesn't really bother me.
By the way, if you've listened to the podcast or watched it on YouTube, you have seen and or heard Kurt's impersonation of Donald Trump.
Oh, you're going
to
make
Would
me
you
do
like
it right
to?
Now.
Oh, yeah, we got a crowd. Give it up for him. Kurt Wheeler's going to do his Donald Trump.
What do I got to talk about, though?
Talk about DeSantis.
Okay, well, Ron DeSantis, frankly, you know, if it wasn't for me, he would have never gotten elected, okay? He was minus like 80 in the polls. I don't even know. And then I came in, I endorsed him, and boom, he went right up to the top. Now he doesn't even thank me. He wants to run against me. I call him Ron DeSanctimonious. That's why, okay? Okay? We hate him, don't we, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, yes.
Nicely done.
It's easy. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hack, but I still like doing it.
Yeah. Well, we have some awesome guests here tonight, and we're going to take a break here and reset our stage here. To you who get this podcast episode on YouTube, where else can they get the podcast, Kurt?
Please subscribe, especially if you're here in the audience. Is anyone, raise your hand, be honest, this is even more important than if you've ever voted for a Democrat. Are you not subscribed to Dale Carter's America on YouTube? Raise your hand. Oh, they're not going to do it. Okay, we got
one.
Back.
Yeah, that's it.
So go to YouTube, subscribe to Dale Carter's America. We're on Spotify, Rumble, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, the Schifferdeckers are here in the back. I just wanted to say that name out loud. Lisa Schifferdecker was on a flight with me to Nashville. I told you about this.
Oh, yeah, and you did. That's awesome. Yeah.
And she's like talking me up. Because I hate to fly. I'm flying this weekend. I'm going to D.C. for the weekend. Hopefully Joey's going to have us over for ice cream. Chocolate chip, right?
Come on, man.
So I'm headed to Nashville. I got my book out. I'm going to put my face in a book because I don't even want to think about what's going on around me. And she's talking to me the whole time. It's like, who are you? Why are you going to Nashville? I run a radio station. Oh, yeah? Which one? KFKF. She goes, oh, God, you're Dale Carter. Yep, that's me. And she takes out her phone. She goes, I'm a big fan of the podcast. Nothing about the radio station. I love the podcast. She's like, I've listened to that episode, blah, 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 blah. And so we've become friends. So thank you so much for coming tonight. Appreciate you. Like I said, we're all friends here. All right. So up next, we're going to have some folks who have just graduated from high school, right? We're going to talk about their experience in high school as conservatives. That's one issue. Yep, they've gone through it. And then the second thing we're going to talk about is now that they're going to run the world, you know, what's that going to look like? Because we've left them almost $32 trillion in debt with an open border and inflation running rampant and China and Russia and all that other stuff. So it's going to be their problem, and I'm going to be retired in Florida in about 8 years, so I want you to fix everything so that I have a nice, smooth retirement. So that's coming up next. This is Dale Carter's America, live at Funhouse Pizza. All right, we're back on Dale Carter's America. We are at Funhouse Pizza in Lee Summit, and we have three very special folks joining us. They've all just graduated from high school, so congratulations on your graduation.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, to the audience, from your left to right, we have Cammie, Trey, and Abby. And we're going to talk about several things, but first of all, the three of you are conservatives, and conservatives in high school these days, what's that like? Who wants to take that first? Yeah.
Okay, I'll go ahead and start. So being a conservative in high school is kind of hard because especially with an administration that kind of tried to suppress us so many times at a nun, Cammie and I, and then also Abby at her high school, we all kind of ran these Republican-focused groups. And whenever we did so, we found that the administration and like the people who were really running the school were really actively trying to make sure that we weren't having people come into our meetings, making sure we were trying not to have meetings. And when we would try and get as much resources as possible, they would try and shut us down as much as possible. So eventually, Cammie and I decided that we were going to go ahead and move away from the school district, moving away from the working with the school. So we decided to independentize our group and kind of made it like a hub for the Northland as a whole. But then that doesn't necessarily work out because we didn't have the resources of the school and how easily that provided it for students to be able to come to the meetings because now they'd have to come at nighttime and all this jazz. So it really didn't work out nearly as well. So it kind of just sucked that the school had to suppress our voice as much times as they wanted to, while at the same time just uplifting the other voices and kind of proposing their agenda upon the students. Yeah, Cammie and
Yeah, go ahead, Cammie.
Yeah, the biggest thing was we really tried to do everything the right way. We tried to talk to our administration, really felt like, I felt like we could trust them, and we really, really tried to get everything done the right way, and we didn't want to get in trouble. And every single time we did that, they put up something else for us to just make it harder when there are other Democratic groups that didn't have to jump through the same hoops we did. So it kind of sucked in that way to not feel the support from our administration. Like, technically, if we would have jumped through all these hoops, we probably could have made it work. But in the end, it didn't really feel worth it to us.
Okay. Abby, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah. So for our school, a lot of the activities that we did, we had to go and pair up with the Young Democrat group in order to do it. Like, we couldn't just be the Young Republicans and do that by ourselves. Like, we had to do it with them and be, like, inclusive to everyone. So that was, like, a big issue that we
dealt with.
They didn't honestly initiate anything. We were the ones that initiated all of our fundraising programs.
Was the question was did the Young Democrat group have to meet with you, or could they meet on their own?
Honestly, I don't know because they didn't ask us anything. So yeah.
Just for the recording, too, so I can repeat the question.
Turning Point is a group that all of you are familiar with. Educate me and this audience here on what Turning Point is all about.
Yeah, so Turning Point was a group that we turned to after our first semester of doing work, just like as an individual little young Republican group at our high school. We found that like different groups were starting to basically get press of what we were doing because of so many kids within our school were joining, even though the administration was trying to suppress us anyway. And so we turned to Turning Point and tried to join as a group affiliated with our high school. But every single time we tried to like contact the administration, I remember contacting one of our principals all the way back in July during the summer when we had, when Cammie and I have decided that we wanted to do so, and they decided that they just didn't answer for weeks on weeks. I emailed back again, and it just took so much time to actually work with them that eventually we decided to give up and look towards other options. But Cammie herself can talk more about what Turning Point really is and how it really works.
Yeah, so Turning Point is a great like organization. They're centered around young people and young people in the conservative movement. Like kind of the top names in the conservative movement are associated with Turning Point, and they help you establish clubs and hubs and things at your school and do outreach. And like they have just a lot of different outreach opportunities, mm-hmm. and they work really well with us. So we've been really happy to be able to work with them. We kind of wish it would work with our school better, but Turning Point has been like a great, great resource. Yeah. And they do conferences during the summer. And so I've attended some of those, and it's really such a great program, kind of making, taking conservatives more like younger, just because a lot, of conservatives are older and just like stereotypically are older, so it kind of makes it more easy to digest for young people.
You know, I Googled it, and when I Google search Turning Point, the liberal media has taken over. I mean,
yes.
To the point where it's like, you know, it's almost like you guys are a bunch of Nazis running around in sheets.
Yes, at another high school in Kansas City, they had a riot from like a leftist group to the Turning Point, and then it got the Turning Point group in trouble, but they didn't even like do anything about it. But yeah, if you Google it, I mean, get on the right page maybe and you'll get some good stuff, but gosh, it's just like horrible news. And at their conference, they had some really big protests and just like some crazy stuff happen when there's nothing like wrong going on. And if it was the other way around, if it was like a liberal group, they would not have that problem like we do.
Abby, have you had experience with Turning Point that you want to talk about? Or
no.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll move on then.
It's their thing.
So here, you guys are going off to college. You're very bright. You're going to be the leaders of tomorrow. The country that we are leaving you is almost $32 trillion in debt. Our southern border is a sieve right now with illegals coming across the border in record numbers. The economy is not good right now. Inflation, I don't know about you folks out there, but we went to Hy-Vee yesterday and did not get very much and spent $138. Ouch. I mean, you know, at some point that takes a bite. And then, you know, foreign relations-wise, you've got China who wants to take over the world. You've got Russia who would like to take over the world, but their stick's not quite big enough, as we're finding out in Ukraine. So with this as a backdrop, how are you going to fix it?
Well,
Senator Trey, you're on the clock.
I think more and more Americans every single day, especially young Americans who are using like the resources that we're gaining from social media and mainly like third party resources that we can see that aren't necessarily controlled by these big corporate media groups. I think more and more Americans are waking up to see the corruption and lack of transparency that we're seeing within our government. And I mean, it starts back decades and decades ago. And so I think once we really see the root of the problem here is becoming corruption and the lack of transparency within our government from these different establishments and the agendas that happen here, and not necessarily voting on legislation for the people, but voting on legislation for these globalist and Soros-backed people that are really controlling this government and controlling the society that we see today. And so I think when it really comes down to it, the corruption and the transparency are my two biggest values that I think need to be ran on, especially in 2024, but I mean, maybe when I run one day.
I think that'll happen.
Hey-o.
But I mean, I think when it really comes down to it, I think education, first of all, needs to be something that we need to fix. I think especially we shouldn't be trying to indoctrinate our kids. I think we need to make sure that we're keeping kids kids and not trying to indoctrinate all these different things on them. So I think education and the corruption and the transparency within our government should be the things that we need to address first.
All right, Senator Abbey, it's your turn.
So I feel like one of the big things almost is that like liberals are speaking out so much that Republican voices are almost quieted, or like Republicans just don't speak out as often as liberals do. And so like if more people speak up and band together, then I think that something will actually be changed. But people are almost afraid to talk. So yeah.
Did that thing do it on purpose? I mean, we're at Funhouse Pizza where they have rides, and that horse just about attacked your mom. I'm just saying. All right. All right, Governor Cammy, I'm going to elevate
Oh, yes.
You.
I think the biggest problem I'm seeing, especially like on my level in high school, is like not anyone being willing to have a conversation. Like, I'm not trying to make you 100% believe what I believe, but I would like to have a conversation about it. I find it really hard to have conversations with people who believe different things. And it's just, we can't go anywhere if we're not able to have, we're not able to talk to each other. And like, there's a middle ground that we can find it, but right now it's just so extreme on both sides. But it's so hard to agree on anything. I think we need to be a little bit more agreeable sometimes. Just be able to talk and understand each other's perspectives without like victimizing mm-hmm. other people.
I have a follow-up question on that, actually.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
So I'm way over here. You guys can barely
Hello.
See me.
I heard the voice of God behind me here.
So I mean, I'm younger than Dale, but you guys are younger
Stop
than
rubbing
me.
Rubbing
so
that in.
I know, I'm sorry. But I graduated in 2010, and things have changed so much even since then. And I've experienced, I can speak to in my life, you know, being a conservative of a certain age, and in certain circles, creative circles, things like that, I've lost friends, and people have sort of demonized me or put me on the blacklist for things that they don't even know about me, that they just assume about me. You don't have to necessarily get personal about it if you don't want to, but like, do you see that in your friend groups, in your schools, where people are losing friends, where they're you know, having like personal conflicts with people that are close to them because of this kind of thing, and the lack of willingness, like you were just talking about, to actually have conversations with people? They just go right to the insults and right to, you know, the demonization.
100%. I, like, on a daily basis, stuff like that happens. And I also think some of my friends who didn't know I was, like, into politics or, like, had this group, I would be like, oh, they'd be like, what you doing after school, Dan? Oh, I have a Turning Point meeting. And they'd be like, oh, like, you're, like, associated with that. And, like, then they just start to think these horrible things. Or I'm like, no, just come to a meeting. Like, I mean, you don't have to, like, just sit in the back of the room and watch, like, just come and like see what's happening. But definitely lost friends over it, which is sad, but it is what's true. It's what's happening. And I think maybe me and Trey have different ways we deal with this, or I have made friends and then kind of after, once I killed them with kindness a little bit, told them my opinions and they stuck around. But Trey's a little bit more vocal about it up front, possibly.
Shot
is that
go.
Possibly
Shot
true?
To go. Let's go.
So he might have had a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah, I think over the course of high school, especially, Cammy's been a lot more professional about things, and I'm kind of the one who will just go, like, attack and just say
well,
my mind.
She was student body president,
yeah,
right?
Well,
there
was,
you go.
I was hated by the administration, and they know that. but I think we've definitely seen our fair share of just, like, political hate and the polarization from even just being these leader of these clubs. I remember when Cammy and I first originally started these clubs, we were putting posters up all over the school just to, like, advocate to come to our meetings and stuff. And there were just people ripping them down day by day. We had to print out at least like 200 copies just to put up all around the school because there were so many people who would just rip them down. And the thing was, the administration wouldn't do a single thing about them. And just over the course of high school, me especially and Cammy too, we kind of just got like pinpointed as these kids who were just like those Republican kids. And if you were a liberal, you weren't supposed to like us. And so basically, we kind of got pinpointed our whole high school career. But I'm sure Ivy has some more to say on it as well.
Okay, so for me personally, I feel like sometimes it has to stem from your parents too. Like, my mom was very vocal in our school district about certain things, and so sometimes that would, the consequences of that would come on our group, and like, we wouldn't get to do certain things because you spoke out against certain objectives, or, I don't know, just certain things that our school wouldn't be able to do because our parents were too vocal on a certain PTA or a certain committee, and that prevented us from doing something that we really wanted to do.
God, I hate to be the boomer here, but I kind of remember when I was in school, it was about education, and it wasn't so much about, you know, an administration trying to, you know, guide you in a certain way. You feel like you've been guided in a certain way by your school administration?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think we've been guided in a certain way, and I think that the way that we're that we get taught here in America, especially within the school that we were taught in, is not to, like, set us up for our careers or set us up for life or anything. I think we've kind of been set to be on this path of just obedience and not necessarily thinking for ourselves, but just thinking to listen, to reiterate, and to write down, and basically, and you're just learning to obey, not learning to think for yourself. You're not learning about money anymore. You're not, I mean, I don't know how to do my taxes. You're required to take a personal finance class in the state of Missouri, but I mean, the people teaching these personal finance classes are fax teachers or teachers who are just doing it on the side. And so the problem with that is you're not actually learning the class in a good manner, but at the same time, the curriculum itself wasn't actually personal finance. It was more of just government dependence. And
we talk about that a lot on the podcast. It's like that seems to be the Democrat way.
It's a problem. When you really get into it, you don't really actually see how they're teaching you how to fend for yourself.
They've got a program to fix everything, and it doesn't fix anything, and we continue to pay for it. And, you know, to the point now that President Biden is meeting with Speaker McCarthy, the Republicans actually passed a bill to raise the debt ceiling. All they wanted was to claw back a little bit of spending, just a token amount of spending, and they're screaming like stuck pigs. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, you're taking any money away? Because in government speak, if you have an 8% increase dialed into something and you make it a 3% increase, they call that a cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why they're screaming in Washington right now. And that's what we're leaving you with.
No question, no nothing.
Well, I have another question.
Yeah.
So since you're fresh out of high school and you were talking about impacting education, you know, I want to have kids soon. And something that my wife and I have been thinking about a lot is whether or not to homeschool our kids. Do you guys think being fresh out of the public education system, do you think people should homeschool their kids? Do you think public school is salvageable or what do you think?
Yeah, I had, believe it or not, a really good K-12 education in my school district. It was really great. Like, there were so many good things, but I fully understand why people are wanting to homeschool. It makes sense when you look at it. I mean, I had a good time, but I do think a part of it did teach me kind of how to maybe fend for myself a little bit, like, made me tougher for sure in some ways. I think there's pros and cons to both for sure.
I also think that whenever you do go to a public school like that, like, you learn so many lessons by, like, just learning through the experience, like, the hardships that you go through being a conservative. Like, you learn from that, and I think that's an important skill that you need. Like, you need to have those hardships, and you need to experience all of that. So,
you know, in 1978, the Department of Education was established. We talked about this in our little pre-meeting, and I feel like, and I think a lot of people would agree, that public education in this country has gone straight downhill since 1978 without stopping at go. Education, I've always felt, is a local thing. It's a local issue that you deal with. And what you've gotten now with this vast, you know, litany of agencies and all that from the federal perspective is, it's like, okay, we want you to do these things top down, crammed down from the Fed, and there are strings attached to it, and you don't get this money if you don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so school districts are bending the knee in order to do that. And that's why if I were elected president, I think one of my first steps would be to close the Department of Education.
Let's go.
And it's interesting because the Department of Education was established when Jimmy Carter was president. Since then, we've had Ronald Reagan, right? George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and yet the doors are still open. So Republicans and Democrats, it's like somebody needs to go there and make a difference.
Well, I think definitely with the Department of Education, I think it's definitely a huge problem because I think we've learned over the course of history that bureaucrats are just the people who just destroy everything. But I think when it really comes down to it, education should be a local issue and it should be on the hands of the local people because, I mean, people in California aren't going to be needing to learn the same things as people in Missouri. And you can do it in so many different instances. But I think at the end of the story, education should be left up to the hands of the state and local officials.
All right. So, and that's why school board elections matter a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's like they just go under the radar, and whoever's got the most signs out, most name recognition, that's who seems to get elected to these things. I think that's turning around a little bit. People are seeing that a little bit, and they're paying more attention to school board elections. Is your mom going to run for school board? Would she like to make some news tonight?
I wish.
She'd be a good one.
Do we have want to take, does anybody have
any questions for
in the audience?
These bright young individuals who are going to be the leaders of tomorrow? You may have answered all their questions. Huh? All right. Well, how about we give them a big round of applause here? Maybe a lightning round. What do you want to be when you grow up?
A senator.
All right.
That's my dream.
Josh Hawley.
President.
No. Oh, well, yeah.
That's mostly a joke. I'm going to study business in college, so I'm going to see where that takes me.
Make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And don't get on the public dole.
Same, probably. So somewhere in business.
What do you like, radio? You want to do radio sales?
No.
Okay. I'm always recruiting, Laura. Always recruiting. All right. Thank you guys so much for being here, part of Dale Carter's America. Give them a big round of applause. All right, another one of our fine sponsors at Dale Carter's America is Midwest GI Health and Wellness. And, Doc, I'm always terrified I'm going to mispronounce your last name. And with you sitting next to me, don't you introduce yourself?
You've been doing a great job, Dale. I want to congratulate you. It's Mark Terramina.
Terramina. All right.
You've been saying it right, but you said it wrong just there.
I did say it wrong?
Yeah.
Well, what I have, his pronunciation guide he gave me is looks like Ta or Mina.
I think either way.
What's the origin of that name?
It's a name of a town in Sicily.
Oh, okay. And, so you're Sicilian.
I'm Sicilian.
Oh, yeah. My. Interesting that we're going to talk about colonoscopies now. Right? All right. So I have a question for everyone in the audience because the doc here is from Midwest GI Health and Wellness, and that is their primary focus there is colonoscopies and colon cancer screening. So how many of you are 45 or older in this audience? Raise your hand if you're 45 or older. So raise your hand. Come on, Jeff. For God's sake. You're like 80, right? I'm kidding. Just kidding. How many of you have not had a colonoscopy yet? Mark, Zarda. Seriously? Okay. How important is this?
It's very important. And every day we see surprises that people come in for routine screening and we find lesions. And the most important thing is that I want people to understand is that colonoscopies prevent colon cancer by removing these asymptomatic or symptom-free polyps that people may have and harbor and not even be aware of it. We actually prevent the formation of colon cancer. And in men, about 30 to 35% of the time, we'll find a polyp, sometimes higher. And in women, about 25% of the time.
And if you get it early and you get the polyps, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the vast majority, if we find a few polyps, usually we follow up in 5 to 7 years, sometimes 10 years. And there are several risk factors, and we're seeing more and more younger people, even younger than age 45, develop colon cancer, which is very concerning. Nobody really understands why the incidence of young onset colon cancer is occurring, but it is increasing in frequency. And it's important not to ignore symptoms that you may feel are benign, such as change in bowel habits, rectal bleeding, abdominal pain, bloating. Any new symptoms really should be evaluated by your physician to see if they are something that needs to be further evaluated.
Yeah. So, Mark Zarda, you follow my advice on pretty much everything in life, right? Okay. So I want you to go to MidwestGIHealth.com and get yourself set up with an appointment. I mean, it's not that big a deal. I've had it done. I mean, you know, the worst thing, and you would probably agree, is the prep.
Yeah, I think the prep has improved over the years. You know, we used to start off when I first started doing this in the early 80s. We had everybody drink a gallon of fluid, and now it's down to about half that volume. And actually, every year they come out with new developments. We have a pill prep, which you only have to drink water with the pills. We have flavored preps, mango preps. We still have the gallon. And as I tell a lot of my patients, I save those bad preps for all the lawyers that come in to have colonoscopies.
Can you mix it with Jack
Daniels? Well, that is a clear liquid. Yeah, I think that'd be.
All right. So, and you know, we've seen more and more people who are succumbing to colon cancer. So it's a real thing. And that's why you need to get there and get tested, get screened for it. Now, I got mine, I want to say I was like 53 when I got mine, clean as a whistle. When do I have to go back?
When you're 63.
Okay.
Yeah. Normally, if you're average risk, no family history, and you have a clean examination with a good prep, we say every 10 years.
Okay. So tell me about your practice.
I started in Lee Summit in 1985. I trained in the Army at Walter Reed. And when I got out of the Army, I came to Lee Summit. I was out here in Lee Summit in the 70s as a medical student with Dr. Dempsey and Dr. Bell out here at the Lee Summit Clinic making house calls. We don't make house calls anymore, but we specialize in gastroenterology, which really encompasses the entire GI tract plus the pancreas and liver. And we see both all ages except anybody below 18 really has to go to Children's Mercy or their pediatrician.
All right. So MidwestGIHealth.com, 816-836-2200. You know, Kirstie Alley, you and I talked about that, the actress who was on Cheers. She died of colon cancer. I had a friend of mine who did the afternoon show at my station in Hartford who died of colon cancer. And we never had that conversation about have you been screened or not. He was that kind of guy that said, I'm not going to do that.
We see
and there
a
are people who do that.
Yeah, we see a lot of people who are afraid, do not really want to go through the sedation or the prep. But many men who come in are there really to get their wives off their back, you know. And usually women are the ones that control health care in the family.
Yeah.
And I really would encourage people to do it, not for them, to do it for their loved ones.
Yeah. So, Zarda, we're going to talk to your wife. We're going to get her on board, and then we're going to get you in. And that whole, the prep thing, you probably lose weight, right? Like 7-8 pounds?
You lose about 5 pounds. For
I think
some
in
people,
his case, he'd lose. After what I saw him eat at Funhouse Pizza here, he'll lose 7 pounds.
He may lose 7 pounds.
Listen, thank you for being part of what we do.
Thank you very much, Dale. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. MidwestGIHealth.com, 816-836-2200. They are right here in Lee Summit, and they will take care of you. In fact, you gave my wife a clean bill of health, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Dale.
Joining us, very special guest, Missouri State Representative Jeff Coleman. Jeff, thanks for making the time to be on Dale Carter's America.
Dale, thank you so much for having me.
Always glad to have you here. We have quite a few issues that we want to talk to you about from a state perspective here. And I know you've got your finger on the pulse in Jeff City.
Well, kinda.
All right. So, you know, the first issue that we're going to start with is one that is kind of a pet peeve of Kurt. So, Kurt, I'm going to give you the first shot.
Oh, I get
Jeff
to talk
Coleman.
About my thing?
Yes, okay. You do. Talk about your thing.
My question is, can we deport people who don't return their shopping carts?
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, okay. You go. You go get them, buddy.
All right, perfect.
That I don't know why, but that is like a, it's like it's in your craw.
I watched ever since I watched Cartnarks on YouTube, I've just been like obsessed.
And I
see it everywhere. I live in Raytown. I lived up by the stadiums, and it's like people don't return their shopping carts. They leave it in the middle of the parking lot, and it's just like if you can't return your shopping cart, how can you be a productive member of society? That's how I feel about it. Yeah. But then you take away the jobs. What's that?
Then you take away their jobs.
Yeah.
It's your job to go find a cart seeker. You're depressing this economy
even worse. But yeah. I will tell you that I did just the other day. I was at Costco, and, man, the thing was like a mile away, but I did roll it all the way over to the return place. So you'd be proud of me.
You're a stand-up guy.
Okay, so that's Kurt's issue, right? Anybody want to take a guess at what my issue is, my burning issue? Thank you. Several of you said that.
Got it.
And I know this is something you
we
can do something about, at least something that
here.
You folks ought to be weighing in on in Jefferson City. Was that you?
That was me scooting my chair up.
That's what he'd like us to believe. Fine. Okay, so this has become like one of my major pet peeves. I drive down the road and I start counting the temporary tags that are expired. And I've just got to think that the state somehow is getting screwed in this deal. And what are we doing about this? There's got to be a better way. Because, you know, somebody told me that they saw one from like the 1990s. I mean, the worst one I've seen was like 2021. But they're just everywhere. And I know the state has to have an answer for that at some point.
Well, certainly the state needs to, if you're behind taxes, they should get together and put together a law that says that the local municipalities have to do this. But that's the problem, right? The governor and the folks down at the Capitol don't want to get involved with local politics. They think that that's their deal.
So it's not a state issue?
No, it's actually, it is from the standpoint of collecting the taxes.
The revenue,
but
right.
The majority of that goes to the local municipalities. Goes to the schools, the fire department, the police, and it's our friend Gene Peters Baker that doesn't do this for us.
Yeah, so. No kidding. Well, and you know, we had an officer in North Kansas City last year, Officer Vasquez, who pulled over somebody with an expired temp tag, and the guy didn't want to get taken to jail, so he shot the guy 5 times, and we lost an officer that way.
Yes. Yeah, I do remember that. That is a bad deal, and it's continues to be an issue, not just for the tags, but for whatever the case may be. It's police have a really tough job in today's world.
They really do, and we talk about that a lot. We back the blue, of course, at Dale Carter's America. And you know, there's a theory of crime, the broken windows theory, that if you don't prosecute for this or that, you're just going to see crime spiral out of control. And we're seeing that. I mean, you know, Zarda was giving me grief about Florida. The NAACP is out with an advisory that says, you know, black people shouldn't go to Florida because it's too dangerous for them. I would say if the NAACP were doing their job, they should warn them about Kansas City.
That,
because Kansas City is dangerous for black people.
Very true.
I mean, we had a nightclub shooting just the other night.
I think it's the third highest per capita in the country right now, third or fourth.
Yeah, and it's because we're not prosecuting people. The police don't even want to bring charges up against some of these folks because they know that they're not going to make it anywhere.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's a smooth segue to something that I told you I wanted to talk about on the podcast, and that is kind of what's going on between Jefferson City and Kansas City in terms of this gender-affirming care for minors. I mean, how many people here really believe that if you've got a minor child who is maybe confused about what their gender is, that your solution as a parent ought to be, well, let's get this cut off or that cut off? I mean, anybody really believe that? I mean, yet that's what, you know, the Pharaoh, as we call him, Quentin Lucas III or whatever, the mayor of Kansas City. I mean, he says they aren't going to prosecute. They're not going to ticket it. They're not going to prosecute it. And yet the state of Missouri, as you know, oversees the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. So the state of Missouri does have a role in this.
Oh, this for sure. And here's a couple of things. First of all, you just said gender affirming care.
That's how they couch it.
I know.
And because it sounds so benign.
Exactly. It's so bad. And let them do what they're saying they're going to do, because what will happen is exactly what we're doing with St. Louis. We'll bring the prosecutor here, our attorney general's office here, and he'll prosecute these folks if they're going to do that. I am a huge, how do I want to say this? I'm probably with you on this. I cannot stand that they are taking our kids and mutilating them.
They are mutilating them.
And allowing that to happen. So if you would have been down at the Capitol for testimony for these bills, you would have just gone nuts. I couldn't take it anymore. Because there was one parent there that talked about his 2.5-year-old son who wanted to be a girl. So, yeah, can you believe that? So that's what's happening in our world right now.
I saw somebody sent me a video, and I haven't been to Target in a while, but they went through Target, and Target right now for Pride Month has toddler apparel aimed at gender reassignment. Seriously?
That's why I don't shop at Target.
What the hell is wrong with this country?
Chest binders and tucking gear and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. That's why I don't shop at Target.
I told my wife shops at Target all the time. I told her she's got to cut it out, so maybe she'll listen.
So the state did pass a state law about this, right?
We did. It wasn't as strong as I would have liked to have seen it. The House's version did not allow for anybody to continue that care for the kids, if that's what you want to call it. But the Senate is in a much more difficult position because the Senate Democrats can set and just take up all the time by filibustering. So they came together with an agreement for some other things. I don't know what the other things were, but the bill now says that if you have been in this care, that you can continue it, but there will be no new care happening. And it's only for 4 years, folks.
Mm.
That's why, I've not really announced this yet, but thanks to Dale, I am going to be running for the Senate seat in this area. And we need to get people in there that are not afraid to push back against this ridiculousness,
you know,
because that's what it is.
Kurt and I have a little disagreement on this because I think that once you're 18, if you want to do whatever you're going to do, you're going to do it. But kids is a completely different story. And I know one of the parents who testified who agrees with all of this stuff says, they're my kids and I can do whatever I want with them. And that's not true because the state says they can't drive until they're 16. They can't smoke cigarettes until they're whatever, 18, right?
That's right.
They can't drink alcohol until they're 21. So the state does have an interest in what we do with our kids.
Absolutely.
We have to educate them.
And you can't abuse your kids.
No.
If we find out you're abusing your kids, they're going to get taken away. So that it's not, you don't get to do whatever you want to with your kids.
Yeah. Well, that is a big burning issue, and something you brought up, which really does concern me. When I look at the states around us, like Arkansas and Iowa, we have Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, and we have a Republican governor. It just feels weak. You know, mm-hmm. Another issue out there is school choice. I mean, they're going to do that in Iowa. They're going to do it in Arkansas. Why aren't we doing it in Missouri?
Because you have an establishment of teachers, retired teachers, retired administrators down there that don't want to push back against the schools. Now, I will give credit to Representative Brad. Oh my gosh, I just lost his last name. Pollitt. Yes. He is a retired superintendent, and he's the one that's bringing up this bill, but it's starting to get watered down as we move forward. And the fact is, Dale, it's hard, to be honest with you, that's what really started me into this school choice, because as you know, I've been on the school board for the last 12
right.
years up until this year, and you do kind of see some different things. However, when you start seeing them have the books that everybody knows about in the schools now, and it's in every school, don't let them fool you that when they say, oh no, that's in the big city schools, it's in all the schools. And what's happening is you get these new teachers that are getting indoctrinated from the colleges that are coming into the schools, and as your older teachers, me too, you know, they start retiring, and these new kids start coming in with what they've been fed in the colleges. That's what's creating our biggest issue. Now, I heard the kids up here earlier. They did an awesome job, by the way.
They did.
I am so happy and excited about them. Saying that they had a good school from K through 12, here's the problem. That during their time, that's when this transitioning started happening, and I'm not talking about the transgenders. I'm talking about all the wokeness that's going on. You really started seeing this wokeness when COVID hit.
Yeah.
That's when we really started seeing it, because now we got to see what the kids were learning
exactly
online.
Exactly. I just wonder, you know, and I don't know how deeply you want to get into this, because he's going to be the outgoing governor, but I wonder how much of this is at Mike Parson's front door, because you've got a great governor, a Republican governor in Iowa, I can't think of her name, but Sarah Sanders in Arkansas, and they both come forward with school choice plans that are very revolutionary, that take into account a lot of the things that you're talking about, but they've got a plan. They got a plan in Iowa, they got a plan in Arkansas. Where's Mike Parson's plan?
Look, he is a great person, but I don't know how good of a governor he is, because even during COVID, he pushed everything off onto the locals. And you know, we here in Jackson County got hammered
right
during COVID. He could have just said, no, we're not doing this anymore. But for whatever reason, he wanted the locals to have that control. I get that to a degree, but when you're dealing with people that are wanting to take away your freedoms, which is what they did to us, something needs to happen. Get more aggressive, like we saw DeSantis do, and get things moving, not just from the COVID issues, but now to your point, the school choice, because as we find out more and more what's going on in our schools, we got to do something.
Yeah, we do. Something not nearly as important as schools is online gambling. They've got it in Kansas now, and I know people are knocking on your door to get online gambling from Missouri. It's interesting because we've got recreational marijuana in Missouri, and they've got online gambling in Kansas.
Right, right.
Where's online gambling?
Well, that becomes a big money issue, to be honest with you. We've got one gentleman who has held that hostage for the last 2 years, because he wants to get the VLTs, the video
lottery terminals.
Thank you, Chris. And that he wants to legalize that. And the other side of things, they don't really want that to happen. They want the gambling to happen through the sports betting. And so it's a money thing. It's a lobbyist thing. And until we get through that issue, I don't know that we're going to get there.
Interesting. Well, I was at Azura Amphitheater for Willie Nelson on Saturday night, and even though recreational marijuana is not legal on the Kansas side, there was a nice cloud hanging over that venue. Let me tell you that for sure. All right. Any questions for Jeff from the audience here? Got a state rep here, and he'd love to solve all your problems he's running for Senate.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Sort of relating back to the trans minors thing, but just in general, a trend that I see a lot in politics and definitely in state politics is we're getting some of these good laws passed, like Tennessee is a big example right now with, and Florida, you know, cutting back on what they're allowing in terms of what's being taught in schools and the surgeries and the hormones for kids and things like that. But you already have all of these groups coming out and basically just saying that they're not going to follow the law, basically just saying that they're going to do whatever they want anyways. We already kind of see that. Have been seeing it for a couple decades now with like sanctuary cities and sanctuary states and things like that, where jurisdictions are circumnavigating the state legislature or even in some cases the federal government and just deciding what they want to enforce on their own. So as a state legislature, what can be done about that in order to enact correctly the enforcement side? Because I think it's great that we're getting all these laws passed, but then we have to make sure that they're actually enforced afterward.
It's not a question, it's a great statement, because that's absolutely true. The fact is that we got to get people in offices to make sure that that happens, and we don't have those folks in office right now. And so I think to be honest with you, at this point, I think it starts from the top, not from the bottom, because we've tried the bottom up approach, it's not working. So we've got to find somebody that's going to be aggressive and not afraid to stand up and do what needs to be done to make sure that these things are getting taken care of. Because bottom line is, we're not protecting our citizens. And I want to say, in reference to the different opinions, the left always brings together this narrative that, oh, you're not protecting the kids. These kids are dying. I don't know about you, but I haven't heard a lot of kids dying because they're not getting their transgender affirming care. What I'm hearing is kids that go through this, and then when they get older, they think, wow, what just happened? I don't want to do this anymore. We had one in Green Valley just not too long ago. I'm talking about within the last 10 years. I'm not going to name any names. This is a gal that was a girl that wanted to be a boy. She went through high school. I'm not going to get into all the details, but she was around that. She was getting all this indoctrination from the teachers and from the little group of kids that are there. Because in our high school, there's probably less than 10 people out of 1,500 students that identify as being LGBTQ or transgender.
More now, guarantee it.
So what happened with this gal, once she got out of high school and got into the normal world, if you want to call it that, because it's getting worse and worse as well, too. But she got out of high school and decided, wait a second, I don't know what I'm doing here. And she went back to being a girl. She's now married to a man, and she's doing awesome. And that's what I'm trying to protect against. When I vote for these things, I'm trying to protect the kids, which is exactly the opposite of what the left says they're trying to do, because they are not trying to protect these kids.
Right. Well, to your point, I mean, you know, as kids age through, I mean, they go through lots of things in their young life, and their brain isn't fully formed until a certain point. And I have seen examples where they've had these surgeries, and it's like, oh, no, yep. Now I want to go back.
That's
well,
right.
You can't go back from that.
Nope.
Yeah, all right.
Kids want to be astronauts, too. Should we strap them in spaceships and send them up to space?
Boy, I would have done that with a couple of mine along the way, for sure. Jeff, always a pleasure.
Dale, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. And best of luck with your run for Senate. Do you have a pick for Governor Kehoe Ashcroft?
No.
Going to stay out of that one for
love,
now.
Love to have a pick, but I don't yet. So
all
let's
right.
Go that way.
I understand. It's early in the process. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming
Thanks,
on board
Dale.
Here to Appreciate Dale Carter's you. America. Big hand for Jeff Coleman, state representative, soon to be a state senator. All right, one more piece of business before we go. Somebody needs to bring me the box, and we need to give away some prizes here. I've got two $50 gift cards from Hereford House and these two awesome footballs. God, with inflation, we should put the two $50 gift cards together, shouldn't we? That might get you a what, an appetizer? Listen, I want to thank all of you for coming tonight. Great crowd, a lot of great questions, a lot of great guests, our young people, and Jeff Coleman over here as well. Thank you all for coming. Until next time, unless Kurt, am I missing anything?
Nope.
Well, this is the big wrap-up. This is Dale Carter's America.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleCartersAmerica@gmail.com. Check back for weekly episodes. Subscribe, spread the word, and give us a 5-star review. Thanks for being a part of Dale Carter's America.